Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you. Good morning, good morning, good morning. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here at the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby, streaming worldwide at cjsf.ca. I want to acknowledge that our work takes place on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Squamish nations. We support the 92 Acts of Reconciliation, and one of the ways that we work to give honor to Indigenous people is by offering and reminding that there's an opportunity for independence work to be played. You could drop off your music at CJSF. You could go onto our website and connect with the music director. You could bring it in, but you don't have to have spent money with an advertising agency or promotion agency to give your work an opportunity to be heard here on CJSF.ca. Just in time for the festive season, today I've got something really special for you. We're going to have an interview with conductor Alexander Wyman, and he's going to speak on his interpretation of this work, this Handel's Messiah. It's being produced here with the Vancouver Chamber Choir. They're joining forces for the first time to perform this holiday masterpiece, which many people have heard of, Handel's Messiah, December 8th. It's going to be at 7:30 p.m. And I'm going to turn us over to conductor Wyman to tell us more about how this work has come to be. You've coached people, you've conducted people more than a dozen times and played this work more than 100 times. So I'd like for you to tell us about your vision of this work and having the soloists work with tradition, and in particular having them perform the oratorio solos. They're performing the solos from memory. Okay, conductor, tell us more about this wonderful thing people will have an opportunity to experience.
Well, thanks for having me to start with. I was born in Munich, Germany, and grew up there as a very passionate keyboardist. And that's probably still the heart of me. I love playing the organ, the church organ, but also the piano. And then later as a teenager, I was introduced to the harpsichord, which is sort of an ancestor to the piano. And in that mix, in particular between the repertoire for the organ and the harpsichord, I got to discover what we call early music. And what we mean by that is actually usually the music that's written before those big iconic composers like Beethoven, Mozart, And Bach would be the last composer that we usually encompass in that field, but there are many centuries before. And yeah, I was sort of hooked at some point and discovered the repertoire, and then also subsequently got more into conducting. I lived in Munich for a while, then in Berlin, and then work actually brought me to Montreal, Toronto first, and then Montreal. And then there I met a colleague, a violinist, who then later became a romantic partner, and then my wife. And then we lived for a dozen years or so in Montreal, and then moved about 10 years ago to the West Coast, because I had an engagement here with the Pacific Baroque Orchestra, which is an orchestra specializing in that field, really, Baroque and earlier music. And it's in Vancouver. It's sitting in Vancouver and operating in Vancouver. So that brought us eventually here. And my wife and three children and an elderly dog. And I live here now. And we do a lot of work. And you mentioned that before, for the first time, at least for this piece, with another body of Vancouver, which has been around for many decades, the Vancouver Chamber Choir. And they are similar like the Pacific Baroque Orchestra, not huge in size, but very powerful voices and very familiar also with that repertoire. So in that, what would you call that? I guess you could call it coincidence, but I guess you could also call it serendipity, I believe is the word. So a lucky coincidence of that wonderful choir, that wonderful orchestra, and all of them do what they know best and love most, if you want. And it's happening also in a fantastic hall, the Orpheum, a big hall, but very important for the city, I believe, and for listening to unamplified music. So it's a very life event that way, with that wonderful choir, four fantastic soloists, and that orchestra. So quite a lot of people on stage. It will definitely fill the hall. So it's roughly 50 people on stage, but still in terms of symphonic repertoire, a relatively small and nimble group, if that makes sense. I can't hear you. Oh, sorry. Yes, you were.
Yes, I was going to say Early Music Vancouver. Just a little bit more, people will understand the uniqueness and what's so wonderful about this collaboration.
Yeah, Early Music Vancouver is a very impressive organization, and I hope that over time more people learn about it, because it has been part of this city's musical life for more than 50 years now, and over those years it has for once grown in size and activities, but also in the nature of its organization. So now I would describe it as an arts organization or music organization that presents a lot of groups, regional, national, international, and shares that international stage of our field with the local audience. But it also produces, and in the core of those productions is the Pacific Baroque Orchestra. It's, if you want, the in-house band for Early Music Vancouver, and it's a group of musicians that are almost all regional, and has also been operating in Vancouver for I believe 40 or so years, also a long time. And yeah, we run through the entire season, and also do a summer festival in late July, early August every year. And one of the activities is a bigger oratorio or a cantata or so concert just before Christmas. And this year we decided to do the Messiah by Handel, which is a large and very important piece, I believe, and therefore needs a lot of forces to bring together and musicians to put on stage. And it's always a very exciting adventure, I would say, to perform that piece.
So again, the time and place that this adventure is happening.
Yeah, this is Friday, December the 8th, 7:30 at the Orpheum Theater downtown. It will have an intermission, but since we do the entire piece without any cuts, it will be a long show. So a solid 2 and with intermission 2.5 hours, I would think. So you're still out of there around 10 o'clock, but it's like a longer movie, or operas also sometimes are longer.
Think there's something different. Don't people usually use music when they're doing works like this?
You mean play from music?
Yes.
Yes, and that would have to be the case in a piece that length. However, the soloists, the piece asks for 4 solo singers that kind of really stand in front and convey very important points of the story. They will sing their part by heart, so that's actually quite unusual. And very likely people who have been going to hear that piece before won't have experienced that. We decided for that to connect more intimately, if that makes sense, with the piece, and have it shine for what I believe it is, which is a very personal story about life, about the origins of life, and leading your life, and also dying, and what comes after. I think that that personal aspect of the story will be strong, will be enforced, if that makes sense, through the soloists really delivering also a personal message and not singing for music. The choir and the orchestra will use music though, because yeah, it's a lot of notes.
Right.
And it would be pretty disastrous if it fell apart, because without music you can't really put it together again. Maybe at some point, Charlotte, we'll do that, do a performance of everybody doing it by heart. But it would need a lot more planning
Right.
and rehearsals.
But what I actually meant was the written music by the soloist. Of course, the band, people are probably saying, doesn't she understand it's a musical with the instruments? But can you tell us the names of the soloists who have memorized these parts and singing?
Yeah, it's 4 soloists, and they kind of cover the entire range you could think of for the human voice. So there are 2 female singers, 1 soprano, high voice. Her name is Scheherazade, and I'm really sorry, her last name now escapes me. Second alto soloist, Allison McCarty, tenor Nicholas Scott, and bass baritone Jonathan Adams. So it's a wonderful group, and with all of them except the tenor, I have done that piece before.
Mm-hmm.
In mixed constellations. But yeah, that's the choice of soloists is very special, and the artistic director of Early Music Vancouver, Susie LeBlanc, and I spent a lot of time thinking about the cast for that piece.
What amount of time does it take for you to collaborate with the group to put on a program like this?
That's an excellent question. It's probably really hard to put an amount of hours to it. But from the idea for that cooperation between the choir and the orchestra was probably born at least 1.5 years ago, I would think. So perhaps even 2 years ago, I can't remember. So the first thing is to secure a date and a venue and the collaboration between all the links and organizations and bodies that need to cooperate. So it's quite intricate, and that of course takes many weeks and months. And then the next steps would be to fine tune, for instance, to pick the soloists. That actually happens quite early in the process, but then also to set all the schedules in place for the choir and the orchestra independently on each other, but also to get to the final rehearsal project week, as it were. And I can't really give you an account of hours for that first part, but the actual rehearsing the choir will have a couple of rehearsals on their own. Then I will have two rehearsals with them. I will have one rehearsal with the soloists only, one with the orchestra only, then one with orchestra and soloists, one with orchestra and choir, and then the dress rehearsal. So that's basically the tip of the iceberg. or it's probably still underneath the iceberg, and then the tip of the iceberg is the actual performance.
So people are going to invest 2 hours in listening to something that you've spent hundreds of hours putting together.
Yeah, certainly. And most of them are behind the stage and behind the curtain. And surprisingly, many of them are very dry administrative work, which is probably the case for every job.
Right. What fuels your passion for this work?
Well, a big incentive to actually perform this piece and to not just think about it or simply listen to it or imagine it is that it unfolds a power that it doesn't have on paper.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether that makes a lot of sense, but if you look at it on paper, it actually defies a lot of expectations that one would associate with an oratorio, so that it has a plot that like a movie almost that unfolds, that is told. And it doesn't really do that. It doesn't have characters with names that speak or act. It's more like a novel almost about that character, Messiah, that we never, it seems, directly meet in the novel, But we kind of approach from what's told about that person or those things. So it's a little funny that way because it looks, if that makes sense, it looks quite unimportant and not even remotely as powerful as it is when you perform it. And that's a mystery that I've not really cracked. I don't know what the composer did there to make that happen. But when you actually do it holds a very big power, certainly in its message about that cycle of life, but also because it speaks very directly to the listener. So it seems like it's very personal and universal at the same time. And even though it has that religious background, if you want, I have never encountered that it wouldn't speak to everybody, totally regardless of things like faith or set of beliefs or whatever people bring. That doesn't seem to play a role. So, yeah, to me, that's probably the most important about being intrigued again and again to doing the piece, not just studying it on and admiring it, but actually really doing it. Because it's don't know how to put it in words, but it feels like a communion of some sort. It feels like people really get together and listen and listen to that incredible music, which is very deep. And because of this, also the story, it's about life, right? So therefore, it's not shallow, can't be shallow, but it's also not like what would the word be, pontificating or preaching even. It's not, I find. It's very human. And actually when you're in it and experience it, I find it quite entertaining. And I'm looking for the word here, the opposite of boring. So it's very
Invigorating,
yeah, exactly,
stimulating.
and very keeps you actually attentive. So the segments that are the sequence is never very long, right? It Handel really knew how to write and to not lose his audience, so to keep them really listening. It's masterful that way.
I think that's a good explanation for people, because sometimes you say Handel's the Messiah, and they say, "Well, I'm not religious, or I don't go to church." But that experience, when you talk about what the person experiences within, there's been a lot of talk about brain plasticity and neuroscience, that music helps heal while you're sitting there, instead of someone saying, "Take a pill for depression," or this, that music hits particular frequencies that are for themselves, healing or relaxing. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Oh, absolutely. I don't know much about it. I've heard of studies in that, but what I can contribute is only the anecdote of my life experience. But I strongly believe in that. It's something that I have experienced being in the audience. Where, of course, our brains somehow synchronize because they are synchronized by that event that very much happens on the terms of time and the flow of time. So, to me, that makes perfect sense. And I personally go even further, and for me, music is a little bit of the proof of something like telepathy, because For once, doing the technicalities with huge orchestras sometimes, and during COVID times when orchestras had to be very spaced out, and in particular the wind players, sometimes the distance between, let's say, the horns and where I would be as a conductor would be 35 meters. So that's a huge distance. And sound travels at that distance. The travel of sound already takes a tenth of a second or so. So you can't really connect acoustically. You can't really connect visually. I think the only way to connect on those distances is to feel somehow what the opposite end of the stage feels, and I think music is immensely helpful to remind us of that, how comforting it is to just focus on the same thing, and how therapeutic. I think those were your words, and I totally agree with that. I strongly believe in that. I can't prove it, but I believe it.
Yes. CJSF is a campus college community station, and I often ask people, what do you think about the value of mentorship? Sometimes, you know, the station invites people to submit music that they don't have to have paid for a producer, I mean, paid for a publicist. Yet sometimes they still don't send it. What would you say about looking for a mentor or trusting yourself to send off something that you have written to a station that might air it or give you feedback?
I would always encourage that. Mentorship, coaching, you know, the upcoming generation, I think is the most noble thing we can do also as musicians. And we as an orchestra also have a program to teach and coach and mentor young musicians. But also we commission pieces. Because that's another thing. The story of music never ends, and the music always holds more possibilities that are not composed yet, or not improvised yet, or not put together. And I would encourage everybody who feels motivation and an urge to do so. There'll always be a way, even if you don't have a connection at hand, there'll always be a way, perhaps by, as you said, sending in stuff, and maybe then it will be forwarded to somebody who can help and find a connection and find somebody who can help you further. Absolutely.
So I think that's a good way to think about the holidays. Sometimes people come to the end of the year and they get depressed about what they didn't do. But as you're saying, there's an opportunity to go and feel, have an experience, internal experience, listening to the concert. But then there's an experience of just taking a chance and speaking to someone, dropping in at a college classroom or speaking to one of the musicians. I notice a lot of musicians hang around and come out to where people are after they finish, being brave enough to say, hi, my name is Charlotte and I write whatever, but, you know, breaking the ice.
I experienced that myself. Sometimes I'm shy to even watch a movie if it comes with the idea, oh, this is highbrow and this is religious or in the case of the Messiah, I find that label religious anyways not right. To me, it doesn't feel like, it feels like a spiritual piece very much, but not like a religious piece anyways, I know that you feel shy to even open a book because you feel like, oh wow, that's too brainy. But I certainly for that piece, but I think in general, it's good to try, and you may find that it's actually not as highbrow as you thought, or you are more highbrow than you expected, and that even if it's m a meaningful piece of art, and by that I mean that it has a message that's not just kitsch or not just over in a year. It doesn't mean that it has to be a boring piece of art. Artists know how to make their pieces enjoyable so that you get something out of it and still had a good time.
So that kind of connects the title of our show, Saluah. We speak up so that you can listen up and act upon what you've heard. So what I ask you to act upon going out to hear the concert tonight, tell us again where it is. Can people buy tickets online?
Yes, you can get the tickets online through the website of Early Music Vancouver, and it's quite simple. It's earlymusic.bc, sorry, .ca. So earlymusic.bc.ca, and the show is Friday, December the 8th, 7:30 at the Orpheum Theatre.
A beautiful theater, a beautiful experience, and an opportunity to just relax and see what and how this work takes place. It sounds like an adventure happening. As you're listening, there's this internal adventure going on. So thank you so much for taking the time to come and share your ideas, share more information that pe will help people not set their own limitations and notions about coming to see this work. And also, we want to just congratulate you all on collaborating. There's so much talk about what we can't do and how people can't get along, but I think just the witness of the number of hours and the disciplines working together and people, the soloists memorizing. How long does it take to memorize a piece like that?
That's a good question. They all have sung it many times, but I went through the labor this summer because I decided to play a piece that I had often performed, a solo part on harpsichord by memory. But it still took me probably, it was a 30-minute piece. It probably took certainly hundreds of hours.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how many. So yeah, they put in a lot of time.
Well, we want to thank them for doing that and for just an example of what's possible because, in this quick, clickety click, what about the clickety click world, when people don't know something after a day, they say, oh, I can't remember it. But hundreds of hours, that is, more realistic. And then also showing by the respect that's getting, the number of people talking about this first time collaboration, people can see the benefit of sticking with something until you memorize it. They're sticking with something until you're ready to present it. So thank you for being a living example and sharing that with us.
Well, thank you for having me here, Charlotte. This was an honor. Thank you.
Thank you.
That will be a little mini festival, actually, that Early Music Vancouver is launching for the first time. So there's the big festival in the summer that I mentioned earlier, but now we'll do something in the winter, and will happen right after a new year with three shows. They are all quite interesting, but I'll mention only one to you. It will be a recording, also CD recording, but also a live show with a countertenor from the United States. Reginald Mobley is his name. Reginald, and then Mobley. He's a fantastic artist, and we have worked with him many times in the past. And this time we do a mix of contemporary Canadian music and a few jazz standards that we have arranged, and some Baroque music, Purcell, Henry Purcell. And the show is on, I don't remember now. I believe it's January the 12th Or the 13th. It may be the 13th.
And where is that again?
But where?
Yes.
That's in the playhouse.
Okay.
In the playhouse. And you will find that on the Early Music Vancouver website as well. The little festival is called Lumen, Lumen. And it's one of the three shows there. He's a fantastic singer. So and maybe if he's around, it would be even there would be a chance to connect with him because he's also has been quite the activist and public voice also for quite a while. Just wonderful guy.
So I would find out or connect with him through through the Playhouse or through
The easiest would be to connect through Early Music Vancouver. Had you been in contact with Angela?
yes.
Yeah, so that would be probably the easiest. Angela could arrange to connect with him di directly.
Yes, I think that would be good for people to know about and also to interview him. I think one, again, another goal for our station is playing Canadian music. And sometimes when I ask and people say, oh, I don't know. So the having an opportunity to interview people, but also being able to highlight these shows that are being produced by Early Music Vancouver and to remove the barriers. Because sometimes when people just hear the name of something, they automatically opt to count that, well, they wouldn't listen to me or there wouldn't be an opportunity for me. Do they does Early Music Vancouver, do they have any opportunities for volunteers?
Oh yeah, very much so. I mean, probably every non-profit organization, a big part of their work relies on the help of volunteers, and also not perhaps. Unlike the name may suggest, early music, that it's sort of a nichey, whatever, limited to one continent or that kind of thing. It's not at all, actually. It's certainly not the intention of the organization as such, and even less the intention of the director. Susie LeBlanc. So we are e eager actually to reach out and also to learn, because there's so much you can learn only from the people who bring a tradition or an idea or a skill or a musical instrument that we haven't used yet. And in that concert that I mentioned to you with Reggie Mobley, we for instance also will premiere one commissioned piece for Chinese instruments
Wow.
and European Baroque instruments. And some of the Canadian compositions that we do are contemporary composers. One passed away a year ago, but they were commissioned for Baroque instruments. So the idea to have bridges there and to find ways to understand more of one another, that's sort of in the DNA of what we try to do. And yeah, therefore you'll always find an open door.
Do you know if the show has prepared any trailers or pieces? I try, when I interview people to play either some music that the group has or something that's an example from the show. Would you would do you know if you have something like that that we would be able to play in our station group?
I'm sure there is something. I haven't checked the website recently. Often you even find trailers, or sometimes they send out newsletters. But again, Angela would be the best person. She would then be able to connect you to the media release person in the office. Her name is Adele. But Angela would be the best connecting point.
Yes, I will connect because you talk about AI. Sometimes when you're searching for Canadian music about food or Canadian music about storms, it pulls up one. A lot of people don't know from these bases. Sometimes the AI music is only as recent as 2019. So if there's something that's recent that you're looking for, it doesn't come up there. So really being able to work with the publicist so that when we interview someone about a show, would be able to play an excerpt. So people who might have in their head, oh, I don't like that kind of music, and they hear it, they would say, oh, that might be nice. So.
Oh yeah, I mean, definitely. I even experienced that often. If we don't do crossover programs, so if we do just our normal stuff, I often find people that say, "Oh wow, if I would have known
Right.
that it sounds like that." But in particular for that, because there we do repertoire that you wouldn't even expect. Not just even in Baroque or early music environment, but also in classical, in the field of classical music in general. But Reggie, and therefore it's really tailored around him. Reggie as a singer is also somebody who can sing a personal song as convincing as he would sing Bach or Handel. But also, he's a fantastic jazz singer as well, and he can do all sorts of things. They're very, very convincing.
Right.
So,
And that's for January 12th or 13th that he will be.
yes, yeah, I would have to look it up. It's around there. I believe a Saturday, and it would be January. Yes, January the 13th.
Right. Well, make contact with him so that we can interview him and people can hear about his music. A lot of times you don't get jazz maybe two or three times in the whole year in Vancouver. So that would be something to know in January you can hear. And thank you. Thank you so much for a generous contribution of your time, your ideas, and helping people to understand why they want to go and have this internal adventure listening to Handel, the Messiah, in its new collaborative form.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's pray.
This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here at the place to be where you've been, Saluau, where we have heard a speak up about Handel's Messiah, about other musical things happening in Vancouver, where people can be lifted and taken away to an internal space of peace and inspiration. I know that you are going to act upon what you've heard, act upon not judging music by the title, but really giving it an opportunity to see how it can resonate with you. I'm going to say goodbye now, but you will hear me again next week at 10. But when people ask me what time it is, or I ask them about what time it is, you know that it is really always love time, poem time.
Love time, poem time, love time. Love time, poem time, time for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time, time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time, time for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon. Love time. Poem time, time for poems, poets and singers, time to untie all life's ringers. Poem time, love time, time for you to reveal to me, unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace, rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words, place for love instead of swords. Love time, poem time, love time, poem time, times for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time, time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time, times for words to wash the wounds.